What's up, guys? Welcome to the first edition of Cyclone Fanatic TV Live. I'm Jared Stansberry, and we're going to be doing this every Tuesday at noon. I'm joined by my co-host.
Except on every Tuesday at noon, I will be here on time.
Yeah, yeah. Except for today. That's kind of our fault, though.
Well, I know. So I went to the wrong office. They'd moved, and this was, pretty quickly after football season. I think you guys moved offices. But I'm a Christmas elf. Where in June, no one really cares to hire a Christmas elf. So in April, no one wants a football guy. So I hadn't been to this new office yet.
Yeah.
So you guys come here every day, and it's like, oh, Jeff knows where this is. But no, you don't talk to the Christmas elf in April. You talk to Jeff, the Christmas elf, now.
As I'm sure everybody already knows, Jeff Woody, former Iowa State Cyclone, former Iowa State running back. How's it going, dude? What are you up to nowadays?
It's good. I'm just doing gymnastics in my front yard. People just come by and just drop money in a bucket, and that's how I make my living. Mm-hmm. It's just doing gymnastics in the front yard.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
So it's been a pretty busy week for Iowa State football.
Really?
Yeah.
It has.
It really has, if you didn't know. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Jake Campos. I wanted to get kind of your how you would perceive an injury like that, being a running back, mm-hmm. And not being up on that offensive line. When you see a guy like that go down, is that for the rest of the team? Is that like a here we go again moment, or is it what is that?
I guess it was the attitude that you have when someone goes down. It for a second you kind of feel like, ah, crap. Not again.
Yeah.
But then after that, immediately you start looking for a solution. And because you can't really – guys that are at this level of competitiveness, you can't linger on something. Mm-hmm. And if the guys that are allowed to linger, they're probably not here.
Right.
So what is going through the guys' minds probably by the end of the scrimmage, once they find out whatever happened to Jake, they're going to go, okay, now who? Mm-hmm. Now what? And – for fans that are ready to jump off the ledge because they hear one more offensive line injury, relax for just a second. And the reason why is because, as I've said before, the offensive line doesn't mean you have to have the best five. It means you have to have the same five. Like, sort of similar, my brain works really highly on analogies, like 90% of the time. Mm-hmm. So analogous to this is like all those studies that come out, you know, that say like money doesn't buy happiness, but you have to have a certain level of money to be happy. If you're making $32 a year, you're probably going to be striving a little bit for something. With the same thing with an offensive line, is you have to have a minimum level of talent, and then from there it's just consistency. So if you're above the required threshold of talent, which I think we still are, it's not that Jake Campos was going to be an all-conference tackle, which is nice, don't get me wrong, like it definitely is. But if you can get the same five on the same page, then they know each other's weaknesses. And it's not necessarily tendency, because I know if I'm dealing with Campos, I can, and I'm a guard, then I can most likely let him handle more of a double team because he's going to take care of it. Well, if I get Foster, who's as my coach Pope always said, needs a little more lead in his pencil, mm-hmm. as a tackle, and I know he's not quite strong enough to handle that by himself, then me as the guard, I know that I have to lag a little bit behind. One way is not better or worse than the other. It's just that you're going to have to do it differently. So you don't necessarily need to have the best five. You just have to have the same five.
Right.
So from here, the good news is that it happened far enough out from the season that you can develop continuity within the same group. Mm-hmm. That's most likely what Coach Manning and Coach Campbell are looking at right now, is how do we get and develop and isolate the guy that we want to fill in as soon as we possibly can, and then roll with that group. I think that's what they're looking at now.
And if it's going to be Julian Good-Jones, it's going to be that guy, which it sounds like it's probably going to mm-hmm. be. What does he have to do, I guess, to be able to make that adjustment from center where he was at moving up into, I guess, this week to being a right tackle?
So it's center and tackle are they're the two most different positions that you can have, because they require different things. Where tackles are the closest linemen to a skill player that you have, where they have to be athletic. They have to be, which is why you always see a tackle get converted to a tight end, a tight end converted to a tackle, where Carter Bykowski is a, a really, really athletic offensive lineman who's a slightly less athletic skilled player. So a tackle has to be a good athlete because he's got to be able to move and adjust physically in space, where center is the most like a quarterback you're going to get on the offensive line, where he's just got to know everything. So as long as you have the requisite athletic ability to play tackle, the move from center to tackle is much easier than the move from tackle to center, because in a spread offense, which is what they're running, it's kind of a power version of a spread offense, there's going to be a lot of moving parts. Like, there's going to be guys all over the place. There's, you know, there's linebackers that bump in and out according to where the tight ends and stuff are. So you have to sift through all that information. A tackle, you just have to identify like one little corner of the field where the center is going to be different. So with Good Jones, he's going from having to know everything and coordinate an entire line to now he's pretty much just focused on himself, and he's just got to be athletic enough to handle a tackle and a blitzing linebacker and blitzing safeties and when you got guys twisting and stuff like that. So it's more of a mental to physical challenge now.
And is there anything that I guess Coach Manning, Coach Campbell can do with the scheme to kind of not really like mask that, but to maybe help him out with that adjustment?
So that was what I was talking about with as far as you don't have to have the best five, you got to have the same five. Mm-hmm. So say Julian Good-Jones is not going to be the same quality pass protector as Jake Campos was, or he would be the starter.
Right.
So there's obviously something that's deficient with him as opposed to Jake. So what you can do in a situation where you have a guy that's just less good at something, you take with the other five and you mask whatever that is. So what happens? So say Julian Good-Jones, hypothetically, I don't know enough about the kid. I haven't watched enough of his film to make a valid determination. So this is working on a hypothetical. So say hypothetically, Julian Good-Jones is a little bit too tall and not really strong enough to set his hips against a blitzing defensive end. Most likely what you can do in that situation is usually on offense, you're going to have a man side and a zone side on most drop back protection. So a man side means the front side tackle is going to take the widest downhand rusher, so the defensive end. Mm-hmm. The front side guard is going to take the second downhand rusher, most likely like a three technique or defensive tackle. Then the other three guys are going to sift backwards and sort for the next three bodies that come in. So as you can tell, if you're going 2-on-2 and then 3-on-2, then that 3-on-2 side has way more help than the 2-on-2 side does. So what you can do with when you know you've got a deficiency and you know that there's an advantage, say, let's go to the University of Iowa and say Drew Ott was back. Most likely Julian Good-Jones versus Drew Ott is an advantage for Drew Ott every time. Mm-hmm. But what you can do is you can shift the protection, and instead of going up there and saying, all right, we're going to run pass protection, you know, we're going to run, we called it 66 and 67. We're going to run 66, which is man side to the right, and then Julian, good luck against Ott. Where instead you can mask that coverage and flip it, and then you can just make sure that you're going to shade the zone side to his side, and it automatically gives him help. And as he's less one-on-one, he can fudge a little bit to the inside, and he knows that he's going to have help. And if you do want to eliminate that tendency, then you have a running back or a tight end that's just going to be attached to that side that gives a little chip to slow down the end. So it takes away the true man-to-man capacity. And the same thing for a double team run block is, if I know that my guy's not quite strong enough to do it by himself, as a guard or a tight end, I just hang on to that block a little longer. Mm-hmm. And then once we know that it's established in the double team, then I can pass it off to him and I can move to my next responsibility. So again, it's not that it's better or worse. It's obviously, I take it back, it's better to have a guy that can just handle someone
right
by themselves, like KO. It's great. But it's not awful to have the other, so long as you know what that other is. Mm-hmm. If you continually have jumbling and you have a different offensive line every single week, which is, I think in 2013, my senior year, we had in 12 games, we had 9 different offensive line combinations because of injuries. That's not good.
Right.
Because you don't get to rep the amount of times of what it feels like when Oney is going instead of, say, Oney Amoile is playing with the Raiders versus Ethan Tufte, who could squat 800 pounds. I don't know what the difference is until I feel what that is over and over again. So it's just an adjustment fluidity thing.
And then if you look at it from like a skill position player angle, does, as a running back, does knowing that guy is on that right side or whatever, does does that go through your mind a little bit where in a play you're kind of – I don't know. You're just a little bit maybe tentative because you don't know quite what that guy's going to do yet.
I think it's, yeah, it's more not necessarily tentative, but it's more observational than it is reactionary. And with a guy that you know, and let's say, again, I'll use Carter Bykowski as the example because I played with him for forever. So say Carter Bykowski's the guy. Carter was physical as hell, mm-hmm. and he had great technique, but he wasn't the strongest dude. So if there was a really, really strong defensive end, and we watched that in game film, I knew that Carter was most likely going to get pushed back a little bit. So when I was taking my track for any inside run or any power play, I knew that I wasn't most likely going to get a true cutback around him mm-hmm. because he was going to get blown back a little bit. So I know that going into the play. And it's not something I think about. It's just something that I react to because I've felt that so many times before. For those of you that are fans of basketball, you have George Niang in the post versus having someone like, I don't know, Dwight Howard. Yeah. And it's not that one is better than the other. It's just one is different than the other. So if you're a shooter, you know that Howard's most likely going to draw attention from another big guy versus drawing attention from a skill guy because of passing and skill perspective. So you just know what the defense is going to do to react to him. So the same thing with an offensive line is I know if my guy is a little bit more light in the ass and he's not going to push someone around, then I know that my track has to balance him, balance off of that, and I have to take that as a reaction as opposed to observation. And what I mean by observation is that I just have to watch what he's doing. Right. So my eyes can't be on what my reads are. I have to have kind of a peripheral view of what that looks like. So again, it just comes with time and repping the same group over and over again. So we're not screwed yet by any stretch of the imagination. It's just we have to develop a new set of continuity, which is different than the one that we had before.
Yeah, definitely. We have to go a little bit short today since, you know, since obviously we messed up with the all this, but then, Jeff, you've also got to get back to your other job, but we were going to talk a little bit about the 4-2-5 defense.
Yeah, we can do that.
And
we can do that.
I wanted to – I guess my first question is, what is the difference kind of between what Iowa State was running before besides the fact that there's fewer linebackers mm-hmm. on the field?
So it's – the difference in a 3-4 and a 4-3 is who's doing what. Mm-hmm. So this, they're still accomplishing the same goal. So with a defensive line – in a three down, you're trying to eat up as many blocks with those three as you possibly can. Because in any defense, if a defensive lineman makes a tackle, it's because he either was unblocked on like a zone read and he had a read player. But most likely what's going to happen is if a defensive lineman makes a tackle, it's because he just truly beat a block or a guy missed a block in general. So most likely your defensive linemen are going to be, as far as your tackle list is concerned, 6, 7, 8 in any given game, where your linebackers and maybe your strong safety should be your top three tacklers in every single game. So in any defensive line, you're trying to eat up as many offensive linemen as you can so your linebackers and safeties can run free. Mm-hmm. So with a three down look, you're trying to do a little more of the eating up with fewer guys. So you position them accordingly, where you're going to play head up on the tackles and head up on the center, and then you're going to move those guys so the guards have to slow down a little bit, which gives your linebackers more time to run around. With a four down look, which is what Iowa State had run predominantly with Wally Burnham until last season, mm-hmm. with a four down look, you're trying to eat up those five offensive linemen blocks with four guys. So you can play around with that a little bit more. What that takes away from is you don't have as much speed on the field to do the running around, but what it gives you is more certainty that you're going to get all those blocks eaten up. So it's more than one way to skin a cat, and I don't think it's all that different mm-hmm. in execution. It just looks funnier.
Yeah. So then when you go what Iowa State's doing now where you've got five DBs on the field, mm-hmm. would that kind of counteract a little bit of what you say with that you've got a little less speed on the field?
Right. It's what you lose when you run a 4-2-5, what you lose is – as opposed to a true 4-3, which, again, I hate to bring up Iowa twice in a Cyclone Fanatic podcast, but Iowa is the quintessential 4-3 team. They always have three big linebackers on the field because they're playing in the Big Ten, which is downhill. So you need bodies to take on big bodies. So a tight end or a fullback is better attacked with a linebacker than it is with a safety. What Iowa State is doing is most likely they're not going to see a tight end, a fullback, and a running back, so you can give up some speed. That corner just has to be the bridge between a linebacker, or that nickel has to be the bridge between a linebacker and a corner. He's got to be fast enough to cover in space, but he's got to be physical enough to every once in a while knock it around in the box. So it's not With a 4-2-5 and the 4-3 are pretty similar. And from a concept perspective, if you've ever played Madden or the late, great NCAA football game, when you're running the nickel package, essentially it's the same thing if the nickel was a little bit bigger. Like, that's the same defense you're running all the time. So most teams already have a 4-2-5 package just because if you got three wide receivers, you want three corners to match your three wide receivers. So I think we're good, and I'm excited to see who ends up kind of sifting to the top of these different positions that are still battling.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I said I know you said that you've got to get going at around 12:40, right?
Yeah. Sadly.
I forgot to mention our friends over at Agrigold for getting us all set up here with CFTV
fancy.
Live. It looks absolutely awesome.
It's fancy.
Right back there. So yeah, I had to give a quick shout out to them. They are our sponsor, and they're going to be helping us get this done every Tuesday starting at noon. We promise. Moving forward.
The Christmas elf knows where the Christmas shop is now.
Yeah. All right. So for Jeff Woody, I'm Jared Stansberry. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.